Hey everyone, it's Dave. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to let everybody know that not only do I give my books away for free, but I pay for shipping. I'll sign it, send it to you. Just go to shipmeyourbook.com. Shipmeyourbook.com. Enjoy my book. Thanks so much.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
We got Kevin, Paul Mary, and Alan Lazaros, my boys from the Next Level University, some of my oldest coaching clients. I figure I'm going to sit here till you guys are bald. That's how long I'm going to coach you and mentor you two. You're going to have no more hair left. Neither will I, by the way, because I'm living to over 111. If you were here earlier, you would have heard that. Man, it's so good to see you guys. I know we had a quick session last week. I want to show people how coaching should be done and how your clients should be prepared to do it, because you guys are aces in my books. Let's get started.
We appreciate that, Dave, as always. All right. So number one, Alan and I literally right before this just did an episode on the importance of long-term thinking. That is one thing that you have illuminated for me. I know you remember back in the day where I was very, very scarce, and Alan has really helped me with that as well. How does somebody adopt that kind of thinking when it's not natural? I know for me, a lot of it is just because I've spent time with you and Alan. How does somebody learn to understand that it's not a short game? It really is a long, long game.
You know, especially if you're young, it's very difficult because of proportionality. Think about this. You know, why does time move faster and faster as you get older? Because when you're 5 years old, a year is 1/5 of your life. When you're 10 years old, it's 1/10. When you're 80, it's 1/80. So if you understand perception, it's obvious why. So one of the tricks, especially if you're young, and I learned this when I was young, I was studying, economic warfare, they called it. And I believe I was in high school. And I was so amazed that China had a 20-year economic warfare plan. So the things that they were doing economically to America, they were planning on effectuating 20 years from then. And it just kept resonating. I'm like, wow, you know what? And I was young, right? It was more than my entire life, 20 years. So perception wise, you know, that's a long time to be planning for. And then I started thinking about it and I started adapting a 20-year plan to everything that I did. You know, I wanted to see the effects of where I would be. And that led to the consistent, persistent behavior. It led to acceleration, growth, compound interest. And what was interesting enough about thinking long, right? I started realizing that I had focused so much on having strength, right? To overcome things, to continue on, all this strength. But if you could combine, because everybody can get over hard, you know, believe it or not, people don't mind hard. They don't mind strengthening up to make, you know, get over what's hard. But you know what they're really afraid of is long. Mm-hmm. People are afraid of long. You know, if I told you, man, you know, come run with me as fast as you can for 100 meters, you know, as fast as you can with weights on your back, you'd be like, fine. If I said, hey, man, come walk 25 miles a day with me, walk, you'd be like, dude, I'm not going to walk 25 for the next, what, 20 years? Right. You don't like long. So I think it's really important to whatever time or segmentation. Now, the gift is this. If you learn to stay strong, consistent and persistent in the pursuit of that 20-year plan, it doesn't become years anymore. So whatever form, whether you say it's 20 years, 20 months, 20 weeks, or 20 hours, if you stay consistent in the attention and intention of the coincidences you want, the first segment might be the one that you assign to it, meaning 1 year. But if you stay in that focus, the second one might be 11 and a half months. And the third segment might be 11 months. And the fourth segment might be 10 and a half months, and so on and so on. And pretty soon, not only are you getting there in a consistent, persistent way, but you're accelerating and you're getting there faster than you ever imagined without the resistance that we create by thinking that we have to do everything today and putting a time. It has to be done by tomorrow. It has to be done by the end of the year. What drives me crazy at the beginning of the year is my clients that say, Dave, I want to make my first $1 million by the end of the year. Right. And it reminds me of Goodwill Hunting when he says that arbitrary and capricious, why don't we go get some caramels? Right? Because it is. You're just creating resistance. 1 year. What does the universe know about 1 year? Let's try to double the amount of money that you make as fast as you can. for as long as you can.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah, please.
So one of the things, Alan and I were on a podcast and the host asked us to give advice for goal setting. And for the first time in my life, I was like, well, I don't really know. Because again, with Dave, I understand now that time, if you're creating resistance by setting goals, how does Dave Meltzer set goals? Sorry, by time, you're creating resistance when it comes to time. So how do you set goals in the short term, but not cause interference? You know what I mean?
Yeah. First of all, I have many, many goals, and I take care of it by staying present, by taking inventory of my values. What do I want personally? What do I want experientially? What do I want to give and what do I want to receive? And within the context that I might set a goal at a minimum or over. So let's take a goal that can be related to time. I want to live to over 111 years. That's different than saying I'm going to live to 111 years old.
Interesting.
Right? If I tell you I want to make over, well, let me give you my life mission. I want to empower over a billion people to be happy. That's different than if I told you before I die, I want to empower a billion people. There's resistance. Now, they're both goals, right? They're both goals. And yet I have another thing that overcomes any goal. So if I say, you know, I want to lose at least this amount of weight in the next, if I want to lose this amount of weight as fast as I can, not in 12 months, right? So as fast as I can, then my mindset says, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm at the right place at the perfect time. I'm going to angle my life to lose as much waste as I can as fast, to lose as much weight as I can as quickly as I can. But I have faith that I'm going to end up somewhere better. Now, if I asked you what's my goal, you would say to lose weight, correct? You would say I have a goal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's a different philosophy and energy to what I'm doing because it's blending the pragmatic world of man-made constructs with faith and with an energetic sense of propulsion and acceleration.
And then how do you benchmark against whether, if you don't have a time deadline, how do you benchmark against progress?
Acceleration. So I benchmark things in the Einstein's, you know, compound interest or rule of 72. So if I can get 1% better, right, in a segment of time. So let's say I can get 1% better every week. I know it'll be 72 weeks until I double what I'm doing. And if I can get 2% better, it's 36 segments. If I get 3, it's 18. And so I use as a quantitative evaluator the acceleration of how quickly I'm getting things done towards or angling towards my goal. But one of the things that keeps me from the resistance-based goal setting that a lot of people don't understand is that I'm angling, right? So I'm much more open-minded in changing my trajectory towards my objective. That's why I say angling to what I want. That's why I take inventory every day of my personal experiential giving and receiving what's, so then I can find the who that has the what, because the fastest way to the what is to find someone that has the what and get directions on getting the what. And then I use the how, which is attention plus intention equals coincidence. Then I stay present by doing things now, prioritizing by importance and urgency, like Roosevelt's matrix teaches, all under the realm of practicing ending fear to be as efficient as I can, effective as I can, and statistically successful as I can by being a ferocious Buddha and getting out of my own way. Those five daily practices of what, who, how, present, and practicing ending fear create more acceleration, exponential growth, and allow me to be happy where I'm at every day, because I'm not afraid of being a hypocrite and saying I changed my mind or I'm going to angle a little bit differently, change my trajectory. But it allows me to angle to where I want to be and have faith I'm going to end up somewhere better.
Can you give me an example, Dave, where you didn't want to be a hypocrite or weren't willing to be, and it held you back because you knew you should change with a higher awareness, but were still hanging on to a past, you know, claim or goal or intention?
Yeah. So I've had several businesses where I did this, and I poured money into one of my businesses because I started a business. I was doing extremely well. I had family and friends you know, I was booming, right? I was Midas. And they begged me to invest in my company. They begged me. And I literally said, look, I don't want to do this, but I will take your money. But no, my caveat is I am going to lose your money. And is that going to be okay? Right? I literally had to use that caveat. But nonetheless, when the business started to go down, I just poured money into the business instead of being a hypocrite, right? And telling people I was wrong. This isn't what I want. This isn't going to work experientially for me. It doesn't allow me, right? And it was this emotional trap that I just fed in millions of dollars into a business that I knew was never going to make it to satisfy my own ego instead of just being a hypocrite and saying, look, I'd have been much better off giving the money back to the people instead of pouring it into the company. If I was going to give the money away anyway, and this is in retrospect, obviously. And one of still one of the things, you know, I have a terrible need to be offended, and I'm working through that need. But one of the things that still is difficult me to forgive is, you know, I had so many people in 2008 that, you know, invested $10,000 or maybe $25,000, but they had, you know, millions of dollars in real estate and other things. But because they couldn't admit they were hypocrites, you know, when they lost all their money, they went to blame, shame, and justification and just, you know, tread my name by saying, oh yeah, Dave Meltzer screwed me over in that deal. That's why I went bankrupt. That's why I lost my house. That's why I lost my bullshit. Like I'm not going to list out names because some are family and friends of mine, but it was so hard. And still today for me to understand how that could happen. And I see it with my employees that, you know, a lot of times I had one of the coaching clients tell me he had all his employees walk out on him. And in the end, the reason was, is one of them screwed him over, did something dishonest, and then blamed him and took everybody with her. People do that all the time, right? They project that. And it's very difficult. I am getting better and better at forgiving to give me the peace that I want and the certainty in my life. But that's one of those that people ask me was the hardest thing, you know, I've had to forgive. That's one of them. And I'm almost there. I've forgiven the people, you know, through my bankruptcy, but that one to me was just so hard to swallow.
Mm. I appreciate you sharing that, Dave. Really.
Cool.
So Alan and I were talking today about Steve Jobs and understanding that I think Alan and I have a very special bond. And you were talking with Mike Diamond a little bit about, and your guest before about the like working with family. Now, Alan and I aren't family, but I feel like we work really well together. And I genuinely feel like I can't imagine this going any better than it is right now. Genuinely.
Same.
Cancel.
What do you think people need? So for me, as an emotionally driven person starting out, not long-term thinking at all, very short-term gratification, what do you think somebody should look for in a business partner to help them be successful?
Okay, I'm gonna give you two answers. Here's the answer my dad would give you. Number one, rule number one of partnership, don't go into a partnership. Rule number two of a partnership, if you're gonna go into a partnership, make sure your partner has more money than you. Rule number three of a partnership, if you don't listen to rule number one and you don't listen to rule number two, just go back to rule number one. So that's my dad's answer. For me, it's different. I think that several things need to be done. We need to have a clear alignment of values. Mm-hmm. You need to, just like in a marriage, be able to put your partner before you. Very rarely talked about in partnership. It's the most abundant philosophy. But to truly have a great partnership, a partner, and this is why my wife and I get along and have such an amazing marriage, is I know she puts me first and I put her first as well, before ourselves. And if you can find a partner that's aligned with your values, that puts you before themselves and can communicate effectively with you, right? You're going to have a phenomenal partnership. And, you know, for me, I made mistakes that people were not aligned with my values and I sold myself out. I lied to myself. And sooner or later, the chasm gets bigger and bigger when the values aren't aligned. And whether you're successful or not, sooner or later, when your values aren't aligned, you'll be exposed and there'll be a tear.
Right. Because you're going to grow apart rather than together if your values aren't aligned. And I've felt that way with past intimate partners. Obviously, Kevin and I isn't an... I want to make that clear. But so here's my question. So he was mentioning Steve Jobs and Wozniak. Yeah. And then you've got Bill Gates, Paul Allen, right? You've got a couple other famous ones, Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, right? One of them tends to be more visionary and the other one is more operations. And I know that that's a typical traditional... Because what Kevin and I have found is that our True North's goals are similar, our core values are similar, and our beliefs are very similar, but our core competencies are very different. He's very good at what I'm not good at and vice versa. What's your take on people out there who, how can they look in the mirror and go, you know what, this is not a core competency and I need to recruit people on my team that fill those gaps?
Yeah, I think it's a duality of one, you know, that introspective look at your capabilities, doing inventory of your skills, your knowledge and your desire, and seeing how they mesh with other people's skills, knowledge and desire, right? It would just be duplicative if everybody had the exact same book, you know? So for, it's very, very important to do an inventory of those capabilities and mesh your skills, mesh your knowledge of what and who, of who and what, they're both. And then your desires, those come from your values, as you said. And if you can mesh those, that's a huge advantage. Now, one of the other things that has to happen within the context of that is those capabilities that both of you have to be synergistic or supplementary to the business that you're going into. So for example, I've had business partners that mesh with me extremely well, but the business wasn't aligned with one of our strengths or was too aligned with the weaknesses, the type of business or the position or the responsibility. So I think a lot of people fail to look at the third step of, okay, we have our value set, our focus, our North Stars. We have complementary skill sets, our capabilities, our skills, our knowledge are so complementary. But one of us, those capabilities are not synergistic or supplementary. And I think you'll see either Woz or I'm trying to think in Facebook, you know, when Sean Parker, early on when he was at Napster, you know, him and I were in companies that were really early. We, you know, we joke around because Sean, right? My favorite line in the movie when they were making fun of him in Facebook, which is true. People shit on him because, you know, Napster, you know, went bust, right? And he said, yeah, you know, we may not have been able to make any money, but would you buy a Tower Records today? Right? He changed the world. You know, my phone, I had the world's first smartphone with Samsung and Microsoft, right? It was a Windows C device in 1999. People told me, right, it was too expensive and too big, but I'll tell you, I just bought, you know, an iPhone 12. And it's more expensive and bigger than the phone that I had in 1999. So I don't think it was the price or the form factor. I think it was too early. And, right. You know, I think for us, you have to align those capabilities with the business that you're in order to be successful.
Can you give me an example of when you said that someone's core competency or unconscious competency is so strong, but it might not be aligned with the business? Can you give me an example of that?
Yeah. So if, for example, somebody has a great sales capability, they're just a born salesman. They can sell ice to Eskimos. And the other partner is an engineer and they can develop the product, solution, or service. But the context of the business comes out that they are, you know, need somebody that knows how to create a license deal, which is a legal capability.
Right.
Someone that's very factual, that can understand the engineering. So they need a really strong IP lawyer would be a better partner than a guy that can go out and open up 100 new accounts. And businesses evolve, right? And if you see a business that's going to need somebody that has that type of capability, but, oh my gosh, Dave Meltzer is the greatest salesperson in the world. So what? You know, we're dealing with one large company and a licensing deal that has more factual intricacies. I need a stellar IP lawyer, not a litigator, not a salesperson. And so those happen all the time that, you know, someone's a good operator of a business, but the business ends up not needing an operator, right? Or, you know, they're a great leader, but there's no employees. There's all types of different personalities and skill sets that get misconstrued and misaligned because you don't have the foresight of where the business is going to go. And when you start off, it sure seems like we mesh together and this is going to be perfect, but the business grows in a different direction away from one of you.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, that's powerful. Do we have time for another one, Dave?
Yes, sir.
All right. So when we get off of here, Alan and I always just kind of hang out and talk and go over what we just learned. And one thing we always say is Dave is vibrating at such a high level. I don't know that I know what makes up your vibration. So from your perspective, what is it physical, mental, emotional, spiritual? Like what makes up somebody's vibration?
Mm-hmm.
So everything for me, right? My mind, body, my soul, physically, I heat up. So I know when I'm channeling, I know through meditation where my baseline of frequency is physically, subconsciously, and in that quantum state, that unconscious competency that I've elevated my awareness where I know things are coming through me and I can't remember one thing that we talked about or how I answered that or where that vocabulary word came from, how I accessed what I talked about, or just how I knew to do something or not to do something in the moment that I did it. Those are all indicators that my frequency is elevated, that I've heightened the physical realm and awareness that I live in. Subconsciously, I've heightened myself where I'm accessing information that is stored in the 40,000 of thoughts that I may have had, you know, at birth or in past lives, and those come to me, or even more importantly, activating that quantum nature to a potential that I never thought I could even imagine and see things performance-wise in the physical realm, or maybe not in the physical realm, by raising my awareness to literally start being able to, one, be aware of my own awareness, and two, quantify that frequency or awareness or vibration. And the fact that you're picking up on it from spending so much time with me over a consistent period, that you can actually be aware that I vibrate at a certain frequency, that you feel me come on the screen. We're miles and miles apart. And yet I can make you happy. I can inspire you all through my frequency.
Do you feel that from other people as well? Like, do you get off and say like that person had a high vibration?
Yeah. Well, when I see you guys came in the green room, when I was talking to the last guest, good John, my vibration raised, right? And that's why it's so important to surround yourself with the right people, the right ideas, because you're going to take on, just like temperature, you're going to take on the vibration that you're at. There is a homeostasis that occurs that, you know, you're going to take on that equilibrium of vibration the same way you do heat, hot, and cold.
So Dave, if you were around toxic people, your vibration would be lowered through homeostasis and the law of averages.
Yeah, thermal energy, exactly.
If our vibration is lower than yours in terms of awareness, experience, knowledge, wisdom, all that, how is it that we're different and we're not lowering yours? Or are we, right?
Well, look, you know, just because you may not have the awareness that I have, or in a physical realm, your own cellular structure may have a lower frequency, it's not a negative one,
okay,
right? It's not a negative frequency. So all tides rise each other. So I could have someone, you know, a four-year-old raise my frequency, but yet they don't have the same awareness that I have, and they don't have the same capabilities, but they're so positive. Right. They're emitting and elevating, and I'm feeding off of them. Right. They're feeding my energy. You guys feed me. I feed you. Right. This is a relationship that I want to have until you guys lose your hair. That's how long I want to have it, because you feed me and I feed you.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been in relationships, and the person could have a high vibration, a high frequency. You know, I will tell you that our past president had extremely high manifestation power, extremely high frequency, but very negative, very separate, very ego consciousness that I don't want to be around. Has nothing to do, because I don't believe in anything that separates us, but I that doesn't feed me energetically. I don't care pragmatically about policy or any judgments or conditions you put upon the man, because I'll compliment him that he has a super high frequency, he manifests, but he has a high level of negative energy and I don't want to be around it.
How do you indicate that? Like, how do you, is it a different feeling? Like, how do people better gauge whether or not there is a negative energy or frequency rather than a positive one? Like, how do you gauge that?
Consciously, if pragmatically negative things are happening, you know, people are hurting one another, they're killing one another, they're judgment, they're attacking you, right? This is negative. Subconsciously, if you start feeling a certain way about yourself when you're around someone else, then you know that this is not good for you. And then quantumly, if the habits that you're picking up, the personality traits, the characteristics of your own being are negative when you're around somebody compared to when you're around someone else, then you can pick up on the fact that this is not good for me. I don't like who I am when I'm around you. And that's when you can determine whether you want that person to fall away or you want to fire them directly from your life by telling them, I don't like who I am around you. Therefore, I'm going to remove myself from that situation because I need to learn to love myself.
Mm. Do you have somebody who you look back? Like, I know you interview Deepak Chopra. I know that was a dream. Do you get off of something like that and say that person, who's the most, like the person who vibrated at the highest level that you've ever been around? Because for me, it's you for sure.
Whoa, that's a compliment. But yeah, Deepak's up there. But remember, I've been around Jack Canfield, Reverend Beckwith, Lisa Nichols, Blaine Bartlett. You guys have met as well. I have been in some extraordinary situations with, I would say though, you know, now that you say it, I know exactly who it is. It's Master and Dr. Shaw. Master and Dr. Shaw is a Qigong mind, body, soul transmission healer, 20-year healer of the year in China, whatever that means. But his frequency, he can astral project. He's a healer. He's on a different level of understanding where most people can't even fathom or understand what he does or how he does it. In fact, it makes him as if he's full of shit, but it's just because people can't understand what he actually can do and what I've witnessed him do. But I've been blessed to be around some serious frequency. But Dr. and Master Shaw, what I've seen him do with energy and awareness is ridiculous. And that's why I trace my calligraphies every day, because I want to download the information that he's learned over all of his lifetimes in the understanding that he has.
Dave, do we have time for one more?
I know. Yeah, we're over, but let's do it. Let's do it, because I love you guys.
Okay. So thank you so much. So this is a question I've been meaning to ask you. I wanted to ask you last week. And I've been really having a hard time trying to figure this out. Humility. I don't know if a lot of people fully understand what that actually means, because I do see some people who appear humble, but really they have a ton of self-doubt and insecurity, and they're not really that humble. I think you can't have true humility unless you also have self-confidence. What is your take on humility? I want to understand it better. And then how do you know if you're living in arrogance versus humility?
Yeah, so arrogance is one of the ego-based consciousness, right? Fear itself, the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, angry, frustrated, guilty, resentful. All of these things are just like arrogance. They're the exact same component. And what to me defines humility is, at what degree am I connected to the greatest source of light, love, and lessons? To what degree am I not creating interferences, voids, shortages, and obstacles between not only me and the greatest source of light, love, and lessons, but everything else? How connected do I feel to everything? How connected do I feel that I, you know, am in the infinity of time, in the infinity of space, in the infinity of oneness, in the infinity itself? How, you know, do I feel like the humility comes from that allowance of I am in a state of gratitude, forgiveness, accountability. I am in and out of my own way. And to what degree, and the greater the degree I'm out of my own way, the greater the degree I'm connected to everything and everyone, the greater the degree I live in infinity, the more humble I am. I would have to have an egoectomy in order to be truly, fully humble. Like I told you, my quest is to spend minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness and the rest of the time in humility, out of my own way, connected and understand and aware to what I'm connected to and through, and allow all of my relationships to be peaceful, all of my experiences to be positive, continue to expand and grow and accelerate at a rate that is unfathomable to most people, yet possible, probable, and most likely a reality if I can continue to practice ending fear.
Powerful.
Best one yet.
Yeah,
best one yet.
I agree. And I do have so many follow-ups.
Of course. But, of course.
All right. Well, I got to jump because I have a bunch of calls to make. I still call people personally. Friday's training is free coaching for everyone. So if you like this, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Text me 949-298-2905. Kevin and Alan, as always, thank you so much. And if you want to catch a great podcast, Next Level University, Mike Diamond's coming on. I know that. Check out my boys. They're incredible. They're growing, accelerating, and they can teach you a lot. Thank you, boys.
Thank you so much, Dave.
We love you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to empower others to be happy.